Tandem Nomads, episode 14.
Any partner who goes on an assignment will tell you that it does not involve giving up work. You give up a salary and benefits, but not work. I think it's really important to sit down together, look at your values, what you want out of both of your lives or your lives together, so that one person doesn't become the entire focus. You know, there is a danger that one person, just because they are generating the revenue, will make all the decisions. And so it takes work to make sure that they stay balanced throughout expat life.
Welcome to Tandem Nomads, where inspiring expat partners from around the world share with you how they turn the challenges of relocation into great opportunities. So are you following your partner abroad for his or her career? Then Tandem Nomads is the place for you. Go to tandemnomads.com and sign up for the newsletter. Hello, Nomad Nation. This is Emel Deregi. Moving abroad can be such a great adventure and so enriching. But unlike the supposed meaning of the word adventure, moving from a country to another for a living has to be planned in order to assure the best outcome for us and our families. In various episodes of Tandem Nomads, I really, really insist on the importance of preparing carefully our moves abroad on various aspects, on a logistical, emotional, personal, on the family aspect and the professional aspect. I try to bring to you as many tips as possible, and in certain cases I invite some inspiring guests who can share with you additional practical advice on how to prepare your move abroad as an expat partner. So today I brought to you a special guest that will share with you some very useful advice and resources. Her name is Rachel Yates. Rachel, are you ready for the ride?
I am.
Fantastic. So Rachel was an expat partner for 14 years. During those years, she moved to 3 countries in 3 different continents. Today, she lives in California. Rachel is a writer, trainer, speaker, and founder of the Expat Lifeline. She combines her personal and professional experience to design life planning and organization systems and resources for global mobile individuals and families. So she is also the co-author of Finding Home Abroad, which is a guided journal for adapting to life overseas. And she is the creator of the Global Girls Guide to creating a backup plan. Rachel, those are a lot of things that you're doing there. So we're going to take it step by step. Start with telling us your personal story. How was your experience as an expat partner?
I always think I should be called the accidental expat or the incompetent expat, one of the two, because I actually didn't ever, we thought we were just going on a 1-year temporary assignment. My husband had been working in London. I had a home and a career and children in Wales, in rural Wales, in West Wales. And he was on a temporary assignment to London, which meant that we were commuting at weekends, but it was fine. But then he was offered a 1-year temporary assignment to Nairobi in Kenya. And it was, we just felt it was a great opportunity. I'm sure this will resonate with such a lot of people out there. You just think that'll be such fun. For 1 year, you get to live somewhere very different, to experience something. Your children get to experience different cultures, different environments. And so it can be nothing but enriching. And we never went home. Our assignment there extended and extended. And then when it came time for that assignment to end, he was offered another one, which was then in Los Angeles. And then we've moved up here to San Francisco. So I think my story, and one of the reasons I'm so passionate about planning, is because we didn't really ever plan, because we didn't think we were in it for the long haul. And I think that story is really common amongst expats. We often will go. And once you've started going global, it's somehow you become what I refer to as a serial expat, and you just move and move and move. So, and that's exactly what happened to us. So
what were the challenges that you had that today make you so much focus on preparing and helping expats prepare their moves?
Well, what happened? I think it's a longevity thing. And I think it's something that I definitely want other people to know. When we went, because it was a 1-year assignment, we only had a very small, a very small shipping allowance. It was the size of an office desk. So that gives you some idea when you've got two children and you're going for a year, there's not very much that you can get in that. Mm. And so we put everything in storage, including things like our, you know, important documents, family photos. We put effectively our entire life on hold. We never really anticipated that we would be paying, for instance, international college fees, or that we would be transferring funds, or that we would have homes in the wrong country. You know, we people sort of say, oh, it's fine, you can rent your home. But actually, long term, that's really problematic, because it becomes very complex from a tax perspective, because you've got to declare it and you've got to, you know, make sure that you keep really good records. But also the practical, you know, aspects of managing these things, it's not that easy. And it very quickly can become a financial burden, because you end up having a property manager in place because you're not there to manage it. So all of those things. For me, the challenges when we started out, the challenges are what people will be familiar with, which was the cultural aspect and the practical move. Mm-hmm. And that is what so many of us face. And even as serial expats, you face it repeatedly. And that's what we tend to focus on. Whereas the longer I stayed an expatriate, and the more I knew people who were longer term expatriates, mm-hmm. I began to discover that there were some bigger pitfalls that we were falling into. If you like, the cultural issues and, you know, the move issues are very short term. Yes. Sure, your possessions might get lost or damaged or some stuff stolen, which is really, you know, really common. And we tend to find that very stressful.
Yes.
But that's really short term. And it's not actually at the core of where our values lie as individuals and families. Longer term, it's things like we don't have the resources in place to meet the needs of the country we find ourselves when something comes up. So, for instance, college. Most of us want our children, want to be able to pay for our children to go to college, mm-hmm. if, you know, if they want to. And yet, when we started out doing this, my daughter was three. So college was, you know, way away on the horizon. But actually, if you live in the States, people will tell you that you start saving for college because you have to pay such a lot of money for it. You start saving early. Whereas when you land, you know, when your children are teenagers, suddenly you still have the same costs. And yes. because you've been out of your home country for a long time, you're not entitled to your benefits, the benefits that you would have if you've been a resident there. So you're sort of falling between two stools. So it's things like that. And it's not just college. That's just an easy example and one I see really commonly. But also things like healthcare, pensions, that sort of thing. We tend to not plan when we start out.
Yeah. I'm very happy you bring out these topics, because we know that, you know, the first image of expatriate life is this luxury life, like comfortable income, some in certain cases even paid rents, etc. But those advantages sometimes really come with a certain cost, and you've been just outlining some of them that we have really to plan and think of if we become a serial expat. And there are some serious costs, like, for example, the children, the healthcare and retirement, all the things we are completely detached out of from our country's systems. So mm-hmm. we have to find a way to juggle between our home country system and our life as an expat.
There's also this perception of people around us that we live this really lavish lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you sort of do, but it's because it's in keeping with the local area, or that you really haven't thought long term. You're actually spending your long term security short term. Exactly. And we were talking about housing. One of the most common things that we hear is that when people have their accommodation paid for in their host location, and that's seen, and we use the phrase, you know, an employee or a relocation benefit. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, if you had a job offer that said, yeah, we're going to offer you a job in this country, but you're going to have to pay a mortgage in your home country and find rent in your new country, and potentially your partner won't get a work permit, so, you know, won't be entitled to a work permit. So here's the thing, you're going to be down to one income as a household.
Yeah.
Nobody would do it. Exactly. And I keep sort of saying to people, businesses are business. You know, these organizations are businesses. They're not doing it. They haven't got these structures in place because we are such lovely people. They're doing it because we're talking about they're equalizing your financial situation.
Yeah, it's a compensation. We call it a compensation, basically.
Exactly. Yes, and it's not a benefit. We have to stop thinking of these things as sort of benefits because they're not. Actually, it's just leveling the playing field, and we have to be really careful that we keep it level for ourselves.
Definitely, definitely. And it's getting more and more. I mean, the budgets of companies are getting smaller and smaller, and the competition in terms of jobs and people who are willing to expatriate is bigger. So those benefits are have a tendency to also go down. So we really have to calculate everything. So we're going to go through those, walk through all those things we have to think about before we move in terms of cost, in terms of logistics, but also... So before we start, I want to insist on one thing, and I think we both have this very important, mission we set to ourselves to think of the long term, because it's one thing to plan a trip for one country, but if we think that we are going to make these moves more than once, it's important to not only plan the first move, but plan it on a long term. How am I going to evolve in my life as a parent, as an expat, as a professional on a long term in this journey? So can you share your point of view on that aspect?
I am absolutely in agreement with that. And I think one of the things we typically do is we tend to take on these assignments, and I see it growing. I see a growing interest in, you know, being a global nomad, as we quite often refer to them, to ourselves as well. People tend to do this when they're young, and if they have children, when their children are young, that's when people tend to start, because it seems like a good time. And I have this, I don't know whether we have this sense, it's a youthful arrogance, and I certainly am guilty of it myself, that we are immortal. and I see so many people who start. Now, to me, there should be some fundamentals in place before you go. And those things should be things like a will, a trust, if that's appropriate, an advanced directive of healthcare, those sort of things. And when I hear people, which is a horrible thing to start on, you know, those terrible what ifs. But what we find is that those are the things that really get forgotten, or people really feel are too complicated. And I always say, if you think they're complicated for you now, how do you think they're going to feel for the people who are trying to fix anything? You know, when things go wrong, you won't feel the pain, but the people who are trying to unravel your situation will, and, you know, who are trying to care for your children. So for me, those are the things that we need to really start with. Mm-hmm. The ultimate in self-care, or caring for our children, which to me is making sure that there is a very clear protocol in place if something happened to you. Yeah. So that's my first. And then also, like you say, it's almost like you're counting back. Mm. Okay, how am I going to manage my old age? Again, none of this is very sexy. And I'm sure right now everyone's going, oh no, that woman is such a downer. but the thing I notice is, if you think about it, when you first start out, the steps you have to take are so tiny, they are barely noticeable, because you're already used to taking them. If you both work, for instance, both partners, if you're going in a partnership, both partners work, you're already used to putting away money in two pension funds. Mm-hmm. But when you go down to one partner being salaried and the other partner being unsalaried, and I've put an embargo on the phrase giving up work, because any partner who goes on an assignment will tell you that it does not involve giving up work. No. You give up a salary and benefits, but not work. But you need to keep those, you know, those steps need to be taken. You need to basically keep the situation that you have now as much as possible, replicate it, and work on how you're going to replicate it in your new. But unfortunately, we tend to focus on replicating our homes or our lifestyles, and that's not what we should be looking at. We should be replicating our safety nets as much as possible. Yes. So putting money away in pensions. If you as a family know that you want your children to go to college, regardless of where you are in the world, there will be college expenses. And you know what? If there aren't, lucky you have a pot of money that you can spend on something else.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's very, so basically, on your you're very much insisting on the financial aspect of planning long term in terms of pulling money aside, thinking of the house mortgage back home, the college of the kids. Like basically, what you're saying, if I try to summarize it in terms of long term planning, is on a financial point of view, how are we going to make sure to secure our life from now to retirement? And also for our children, to make sure that they have something once they grow and start studying, and even more, maybe more.
There are three parts to it. The financial is a very important part, because mm-hmm. typically whenever things go wrong or whenever you want changes, all these changes take money. So if your relationship changes, for instance, and you've got used to running one household with one income.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking of divorce, right?
Divorce, or I don't even see it. Often it's just people wanting different things, you know, if your partnership, because for instance, I've been an expat partner now for 14 years. And now I want, my children are getting, that one of my son has just left home and my daughter is in her sophomore year. So in 2 years' time, I'm going to have a lot more freedom. And I, again, as you can see, I now run my own business and I will want to do things differently. But that will take money. So if people, for instance, who, you know, the supporting partner who's brought up their child will have been away from the workplace for a significant amount of time. If they want to retrain or go back to work, that will probably take money, because their professional qualifications will almost certainly have lapsed. So they don't get to, you can't just dip back in. So money is one of the core things. And yes, you bring up divorce, but actually one of the things I hear quite commonly is that, well, if it doesn't work, I can just go back home. Well, no, you can't necessarily, because you haven't got the rights as a resident anymore. You have to be really careful on that front. You may not be able to take your children with you if you have children. Mm-hmm. And if you want to share, a lot of people don't realize that often for divorces, local rules apply. Mm-hmm. Rather than the rules of your home nation. So you have to make sure that you can pay for legal advice to advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. And again, that takes money. So that's the financial side. Mm-hmm. But there is also a mindset side that I like people, if people are thinking long term, they understand what's in it for both partners. It's a relationship thing. They are clear on at what point I want to go back to work, for instance, because quite often what happens is, again, because we're planning short term, you think, right, well, I will give up my career for this 3 years, you know, I will give it up for 3 years and then I'll go back to work. But if you're in the wrong country, suddenly you can't go back to work so easily, or you don't have an active resume, those sort of things. Mm-hmm. So I see it from an emotional perspective or a relationship perspective, that we need to be aligned for our relationship to stay equal within the household. The financial side is definitely important. And then also the legal side, because we assume that the laws that used to apply to us when we started out on this journey still apply. And that often is a big assumption that isn't the case.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying three aspects to plan: the long term, the financial, the legal, and the personal relationship in the family and the couple, right?
Yes,
so
absolutely.
Are there any practical tips you can share here so that to help plan this long term? What should we practically do?
I think very practically that you should sit down if you're going with a partner, and typically the advice I give is towards people with a partner, but because then you affect every decision affects more than one person. I think it's really important to sit down long term, look at your values, what you want out of both of your lives or your lives together, so that one person doesn't become the entire focus. You know, there is a danger that one person, just because they are generating the revenue, will make all the decisions. And that's not typically how people go into these relationships. And so it takes work to make sure that they stay balanced throughout expat life. Mm-hmm. So I would say sit down together and actually make a timeline with, you know, 3 years, 6 years, 12 years, 15 years. I tend to use 3 year increments because that's what a lot of expat cycles run on. And 5 years is quite a long time. You know, when you've got 2 points there, 10 years is a long time in terms of career, in terms of income, in terms of some of the more practical aspects. And I think it's really, really important to have an honest and open discussion about where you both want to be and how long you are willing to make those commitments for. And it comes both ways, because a lot of the times the salaried partners end up in a situation where they have to keep generating income, mm-hmm. because the other partner, it's so difficult for that other partner to go back to work, you know, or you won't generate the same revenue. Yeah. Because they've been out of the workplace. So I do think it's really, really important. And then to look long term at, okay, what are the things that we want? What age do we want to retire, for instance? Do we want our children to go to college? And if we do, do we want to be able to pay for it? You know, at what point, look at our family histories and say, okay, you know, what are we going to need for healthcare? What are we going to do if something goes wrong with the relationship, with our health, whatever? I think there is a tendency to focus on the finances, and I think that's important. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more to do with joint agreements on where you want to be. Mm-hmm. I think I see a lot of relationships after 10 or 15 years. You have to work really hard to keep balance if you're going with partners. You have to work really hard to make sure that one person isn't completely disempowered. And that what tends to happen is inside the relationship, people are seen as equal. You know, you value each other equally and you recognize each other's input. But outside the relationship, that's not reflected. And so that takes constant work. And so you both need to be on board with that before you start to make sure, for instance, it's another financial example, but finances is the sort of low-hanging fruit of this. When you go to a country, typically the salaried employed partner, the one with the primary visa, will be the primary name holder on a bank account.
Yeah, that's a huge issue that I had to face with myself.
And that's huge, because in 3 years' time, when you want to maybe buy something, and I say for yourself, but literally go out in the same way that we are so used to going out and buying a car or going out and buying, like for me, I couldn't get a cell phone. As a 30-whatever-year-old woman, I suddenly couldn't get a cell phone. Now, that actually, you can see how, although it starts as a financial thing, not being able to get a cell phone in your own name potentially impacts on your human rights when all of your family and friends are back home. Because if you're not careful, you lose access mm-hmm. to people.
Yeah,
so it's really, really important that you are aligned, because what you will need is your partner will have to say, no, this will be a joint account and I will. And then you start building credit in a joint name, and then you can build credit in your own name potentially. But that's what I mean about you need to be aligned on it. Your partner also needs to see how important that is and the long-term effect of it.
So because how does a couple make sure that they're aligned? How, besides talking, is there any particular way you think a couple can work on this? Because yes, we brought up a lot of logistical issues, but I hear what you say, that all those logistical issues, they're connected to one factor. How is the couple sharing their vision and their values in the way they want to live their life in expatriation? How can they work on that?
Well, I've seen some people, if I'm answering the question in the way I think you're asking it, I know some people do a pre-assignment contract. It's almost like a prenuptial contract where you're really clear how this relationship will run. And if it doesn't work well, how each will get out of it. You can think about a pre-assignment contract. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a legal document, but it is so useful to go back and say, hey, wait a minute. When we started out on this, we agreed that, you know, we would both have access to whatever, or at the first opportunity, I could have my own healthcare or I could go back to work. That would happen. So I would say actually make a written statement of how you think this is going to pan out, where you want to be, because you start to lose choices otherwise, both of you, because you're typically relying on one income, or conversely, the person who is earning the income is really reliant on the supporting partner staying at home. I know the way my husband's career has gone, when my children were sort of 10 and 12, he was doing a lot of traveling. Now, if I'd gone back to work, he would have had to take a different job. He wouldn't have been able to take the job mm-hmm. he took. So it actually is a two-way street. So I would say, you know, write something down. I would say when you go to do anything new, make sure you do it as much as possible in, you know, joint names, but also then in individual names. Mm-hmm. Things like the home tenancy agreements or home purchases or car purchases. Make sure that those are in both names, or that if you have them in your sole names, that the other person has something of equal value in their own name. And that actually has a practical perspective too, mm-hmm. because it means that the both partners always have resources at their disposal. Mm-hmm. And that's really important if something happens to the salaried partner. Mm-hmm. You need to have resources at the disposal of both. But just so that you're really aware going into it, that you need to make sure that the pendulum swings both ways.
Yeah. A lot of things to think about. So I know that what attracted me when I started making research and I found your website called Defining Moves, I really like these checklists that you've been building and this like Excel sheets to help expat partners plan those multiple aspects of preparation of the move abroad. So can mm-hmm. you tell us more about how you did that and what can we find in Defining Moves and also your other platforms?
So, well, let me tell you first that Defining Moves is the blog that I started when I was probably about 5 or 6 years ago, specifically because I couldn't find resources. Most of the resources now have moved over onto the Expat Lifeline, which is the current website that is currently updated. Defining Moves is my historical website, and I don't update it anymore, but I know I am moving a lot of the content over because it's so useful.
It's really great, yeah.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Actually, says the slide, but it just, I found it so helpful. So what I tend to do is, I actually trained as a pilot in a number of years ago. And what I noticed was that pilots always have checklists for pre-flight checklists to make sure that they cover every single detail. And it doesn't get much more critical than making sure that your aeroplane is airworthy before you take off. And what I realized was it doesn't matter how experienced you are. And that's what I noticed when I was flying. It didn't matter how experienced the pilots. In fact, the more experienced pilots were more rigorous about using them, because you recognize that actually everyone is human. We all forget stuff and we can't possibly take note of it all. So what I tend to do now, as you said, I have checklists, and I also try to harness technology as much as possible. There are so many great free resources out there now, things like Evernote and Dropbox and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that we try to do how-to videos and information so that people can actually follow a step-by-step process, and you don't have to try and remember it all or think of it all yourself, because let's be honest, there's plenty of us who have done this a ton of times and have made so many mistakes. It was about capturing all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you saw on Defining Moves, there's all these comments. And sometimes the best ideas are in the comments. So all of that information, and all of that information led to the Expat Lifeline, where it's you can also find all of those.
And you just started at the beginning, just collecting this checklist, using what has helped you, using your mistake, making sure it doesn't happen again, and providing those resources to other expat partners. And then suddenly it started growing and you made a business out of it. Is it what happened?
It's sort of, yeah. It sort of had to become a business because it was taking up so much of my time. What I wanted to do, originally I'd got all these checklists, and one of the things that I've created is an online platform that has every single checklist in there, but it also is a Gantt chart, which I hadn't come across before because I don't work in a great deal in spreadsheets, but basically it's a timeline. So you were able to put all these dates in and out, and it gave you a timeline of when things were going to become due, and you could set reminders. And then the other thing I've done was that I got to know, through doing Defining Moves and some of the work there, I got to know some really great people. And so I started doing a lot of webinars and a lot of tech how-to videos, which are now published. You can access them for free. They're on the member area of the Expat Lifeline, and it's free membership, so you can just sign up and have a look around. But there's some... It started out as pure checklists, and then as I got to embrace technology, it got broader in terms of you were able to use so much online. And then now it's also people. There are so many really wonderful experts out there. I'm sure you're finding this with all these podcasts. There are some incredible people out there that we don't hear about. So
it's absolutely amazing. I'm just, the more I'm working on Tandem Nomads, and the more I'm fascinated by the power and inspiration of all these expat partners around us who just do magnificent work in turning the challenges into opportunities, which is my motto here. And I just find it amazing.
And there are so many great answers. I love the fact that the community that we have, I think, are people who typically are very humble in that they will share with you because they've made the mistakes. Mm. It's not that we're all incredibly brilliant.
And this is what you're doing here. This is amazing.
Yes, I've just made lots of mistakes. That's the key.
I would like actually to outline, to list a bit what I've seen of type of checklists and topics to think about when preparing, because I really found it amazing, and the list can go on. But really briefly, you have like a checklist on how to relocate in terms of moving, how to prepare the paperwork, how to prepare the family move in terms of school, etc. You have a chapter on healthcare, how to manage your assets, the legal aspects, and also the assignment contract. This is a very good point. How to make sure that you have the right assignment contract with your employer or your husband's employer or your wife's employer, and also how to manage your finances. And the list goes on. Is there anything? I mean, it's really amazing that you thought about all these chapters and aspects of being an expat and living abroad.
Yes, you can see I became a little obsessed. Yeah. But what I wanted was, I think my goal for defining moves, and please, I can't reiterate enough, please make sure that you also bookmark the Expat Lifeline, because defining moves won't last forever. But it will all be over. It'll be hosted on the new site where it's a little more user-friendly.
So the new site, let's say it is expatlifeline.com.
TheExpatLifeline.com.
TheExpatLifeline.com.
Although I think there's probably enough redirects that you will find it. But my goal was that I wanted to, I feel you could spend a huge amount of money asking really basic questions that other people know the answers to. If you have to go to a lawyer's office, and you can make really big mistakes just through ignorance and through no fault of your own. You just didn't know the question to ask. And so my goal with defining moves, and the same with Expat Lifeline, is that you know what you don't know, or you know what questions to ask. People ask me if I do really local information, and I don't. I do, it's global. The point is, no matter where you are in the world, you will need healthcare, and you will need healthcare for your family, say. So it's about knowing what things you need to have in place so that you have the best possible outcomes. So I say, you know, like a will and a trust or an advance directive of healthcare. I'm not a lawyer. I don't tell people, you know, what specifically, how to prepare the will. But I will tell you that it's the same for everyone. It's, you know, what you own, who your dependents are, and how you're going to divide one between the other. And it's as simple as that. So it's about asking yourself those questions and getting that information so that you can then ask the professionals and say, okay, I think this is going to be a problem, or I think I've got an opportunity here. What do you think?
Okay, great. And so tell me more about what you're doing with the Expat Lifeline. What are your services?
So the Expat Lifeline was brought about, it actually started out as this online platform with all the checklists and the Gantt charts and just this sort of organizational management, task management system that really helped people organize their longer term life. But what I noticed was, when I started working with people, there were two things that tripped them up. The first thing was the technology. And the second thing was that there was a resistance to doing some of the real fundamentals, like putting a will in place. They didn't know where to start, and it wasn't something they wanted to start with. Or, you know, talking about pensions, because it's very complicated. And at its core, it's not. It's just about having resources for when you're older. That's it. And so then I started looking at I started creating what I refer to as the family file, which is now on the website as a PDF download that people can buy. But it basically is 101 checklists. Actually, it's 50, no, it's not. It's about 57, but it's constantly growing. But it literally is divided into sections like health. It's basically a supercharged version of what you see on the Defining Moves website. Okay. And I started putting that program together. And then what I realized was that typically it's women, but the supporting partners were really, really vulnerable. When I started scratching the surface for myself, and it wasn't talked about a lot at that point, when I started scratching the surfaces, I saw how vulnerable women were. Mm-hmm. And frequently I'm being asked, why is it a global girls guide? And there will be a guys guide eventually, but it's because the laws around the world aren't universally supportive of women. Mm-hmm. So it really needed to be addressed because women were far more vulnerable than they ever realized. So that's where we moved effectively from Defining Moves, the blog, mm-hmm. to Expat Lifeline, the online planning tool, to the family file, and now to the global girls guide. And all of those still exist. But my current focus is on the Global Girls Guide because I just see that creating a backup plan for women especially is a really powerful need. And the earlier we can get people started on it, the easier it will be. I actually believe it should be part of every expat pre-assigned planning. Mm-hmm. It's not yet, but one day I hope that it will.
Definitely. No, I think it's important. So the Global Girls Guide is something that's part of the Expat Lifeline, or is it something separate?
No, it's actually on the Expat Lifeline website. Okay. It's a program that's run. It's an 8-week program that just takes women through.
So the training.
Yes, how to create a backup plan.
So can you tell us more about it? If anybody in Nomad Nation would be interested in getting a super training on how to prepare your move as a girl and as a woman.
Yes, it's basically what we do is the very first thing we look at is mindset, which sounds strange. But what I notice is that the further down the moves we go, the longer you are an expat, the more incrementally you move further and further away from your own identity. And it happens pretty quickly legally. In that you go from being, you know, a citizen to a dependent partner quite often, or an LT, you know, you have some name, but it means that you can't get a bank account. I'm sure you're familiar with this.
Definitely.
That it, you know, that it's quite a bit, it's quite a shock initially. Then you get used to it, but then actually your behavior changes and then your attitudes change and you get a little almost too used to it. And then incrementally, I see women becoming quite disempowered in that they don't know how to get back into work, say.
How to take the leadership of their life, in a way.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because they're so used to supporting everyone else. It's not that the women I see are, you know, shrinking violets. We're not. We are fabulous at really, really providing a strong, secure safety net for those around us. We are fierce at that. But when it comes to your own protection, it's a very sort of vulnerable place to be.
Yeah.
So it starts with mindset and how we behave. And, you know, I think for people who are just starting out, it's great because it'll just give them an insight into where potentially, you know, where this path leads and how to protect against it. And it's interesting because there's a few more people writing about it now, and they're not people, you know, these are Harvard grads with masters and PhDs. And the women I see are, you know, architects and stock traders and, you know, city analysts, people with MBAs. These aren't women who have never been outside their hometown. These are women who are used to having quite high powered careers that are in this position. So it's so we start off with mindset, and then we look at what security you currently have in place in your home country and in your host country. Mm-hmm. And then you look at it within your household, and then how we redress the balance. And then we look at what is it that you want for the rest of this journey, and how are you going to get there? And we have some brilliant, brilliant guest resources in the final week. We have a ton. What I'm doing is just doing a ton of live webinars. People won't have to come on them all. They'll get access to the recordings. But everything from international family law to financial planning to career planning, basically the next steps for everyone. you know, when they, where they jump off from.
So how does it work? Like, is it webinars? It's a program based on webinars?
Yes, it's an 8-week online program. It has 6 live content weeks, which will be delivered to the online platform. Mm-hmm. If they, depending on which option people go for, there will be live Q&A calls and a one-to-one coaching session, or they can just do it completely independently. And then we have a private online community, not a Facebook group. It's a private online platform so that people can ask questions and chat and send private messages if they want to, but just connect with one another, because I think that's really important. And then, yeah, and then they have, yeah, 2 weeks where we just work all together on whatever it is you want to work on. But yeah, 6 weeks. 6 weeks of content, of direct content, and then 2 weeks, weeks 4 and 8 of supported tutorials, if you like. Because I notice, just from my own learning, that and my own doing courses, that life gets in the way. Yep. And so you never, ever, ever manage to stay on this immaculate schedule. So
yeah, definitely. Well, that's a massive program. So we'll put the link to the program too on the show notes page. I think we've covered a lot of things here today. What do you want Nomad Nation to take away in one sentence?
I think that for me, expat life is this fantastic, incredible journey, but it's real life and it can get messy. And so for me, the more empowered and informed and in control you are, both as individuals and as a household, the better this journey will be.
I totally agree with you. So this was really great. Thank you so much, Rachel. We've been covering a lot of very important topics and we'll keep talking about it. And Nomad Nation, keep listening to every episode. We'll build up on all these topics and dig in every time a bit more. And please reach out to us if you have any questions. And I hope I'll see you in the next episode. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you. It's been lovely being here.
Nomad Nation, don't miss any of the great inspiration, tips, and insights that will prepare just for you. Go to tandemnomads.com and sign up for the newsletter.